Mr. Anderson.
Yes, may I please record, I'm Kent Anderson with Federal Public Defender's Office, Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Jerry Franklin. In this case, Mr. Franklin was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm and sentenced as an armed career criminal. One of the priors that his sentence was based on was a conviction for escape for walking out of a county jail in Mississippi. The district court held that that was a violent felony because escapes are always violent. However, the court was wrong and shouldn't have sentenced Mr. Franklin as an armed career criminal. Other courts of appeals have held that escape is always violent per se. However, those courts, by adopting a per se approach, conflict with this court's explicit rejection of that approach and statement that it applies a case-by-case approach determining whether crime is violent under the otherwise clause of Section 924E.
You mean there's a case in this jurisdiction that says escape is not a violent crime?
No.
I think for other
crimes that might fall under the otherwise clause, this court.
For a minute, you gave me a start.
No, this court has not ruled on this particular issue. But with respect to other crimes that have been alleged to fall under the otherwise clause, Congress, besides from those that, as an element, include force or threat of force or certain specified felonies, it said that those that otherwise involve conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another are violent for purposes of the Armed Career Criminal Act.
And so how is an escape, how can you envision a situation where, I guess in your situation, you're arguing it doesn't provide it wasn't a violent crime, but in terms of interpreting this, presents a serious potential risk. It's just a potential risk that the statute says. So in terms of an escape, doesn't that always present a potential risk?
A potential risk, yes, although not necessarily a serious potential risk. And the fact is, almost any felony presents a potential risk of injury. For example, the embezzler who's a bank teller who's embezzling and caught with his hand in the till might resist the attempt to stop and apprehend him.
No, but that would be a different thing. The apprehend him would be entirely different than if he suddenly was seized with an idea he was not only embezzled but shoot the president in the process. I suppose you could have to stretch it a tad, but I don't know how embezzlement can be a violent crime.
Well, I don't.
Surreptitious stealing is.
I don't either, but the other courts of appeals, many of them have relied on a finding that there are supercharged emotions involved in an escape situation, and a prisoner might physically resist if he's caught attempting to escape. Which I will concede that's true, but it's also true for a lot of other crimes.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be the embezzlement. He'd be trying to escape. But you're back to where you were.
Right. But on the other hand, shoplifting, if they're the store security is attempting to apprehend them, they might physically resist.
They might. They might.
In fact, it's not unusual.
You might be arguing for the prosecution this way. They might not disagree with you.
A crime that this court has specifically found isn't a violent felony, theft from a person, pickpocketing or purse snatching, would seem could easily turn into violent if the person is caught in the act by the victim. It could become an attempted robbery or robbery.
You cite the United States versus House for that proposition. That is, you indicate we should look to the indictment or the information to determine the nature of the offense?
That's correct. And in certain cases where this court is, where the, both of them have been ambiguous, this court has allowed courts to look to something else that would establish undisputed facts about the prior record, so long as an evidentiary hearing would not become necessary. And that's the approach that the district court should have taken below, and which I would urge this court to maintain. There's no difference between escape and any other felony for purposes of the otherwise clause.
Was the information or indictment on this charge tendered to the district court?
Yes, it was. And it was ambiguous. Under the charge, it could have been committed either violently or nonviolently. There was no way to tell.
Just track the statute rather than...
It didn't even do that. It basically said escape by unlawfully leaving the jail. But if you look at the statute coupled with the case law, and I say the government is probably correct about the proper statute, but escape doesn't have to be violent under the statute either.
And have you found any circuit that supports your interpretation?
Surprisingly, no.
So who's surprised? You were.
Well, yes, I'm, and other people I've talked to, but that obviously we're not.
Sure
we don't have binding opinions, unfortunately.
Were they interpreting the these other circuits? Were they interpreting the Mississippi statute?
No, they were not.
Other escape statutes.
Other escape.
This is correct. And although they went so far as to say that it really didn't matter in their opinion that escape is always violent, another rationale that they, many of them applied is the theory that the escapee might resist an attempt to retake him. That is certainly possible, but aside from the fact that the escapee...
Well, it's indicated some sort of desire not to be in custody, at least. Yeah.
This is true. but as I was saying, aside from the fact the escape is already done with by that point, for any crime where an officer is approaching somebody with an intent to arrest them, there's a possibility that they might physically resist arrest. But Congress didn't say that all felonies qualify for sentencing as an armed career criminal. It limited it to a specific subclass, and that's why we're here. This court should maintain its prior approach of case-by-case particularized determination under Taylor v. United States and the court's precedents, and remand this case to the district court for recent sentencing after reversing Mr. Franklin's sentence. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Marks and I represent the United States. I'd like to address a question that was raised during the appellant's argument in terms of how the court should approach an analysis under 924E. The directive of the Supreme Court in Taylor and this court's decision in Fife urges the court and directs the court to follow what is known as the categorical approach. That means you cannot look at the underlying facts of this defendant's conviction. You can look at what the fact the defendant was convicted of a crime and what are the elements of that crime under the state statute. There are only rare circumstances in which you can go beyond those two facts. That is where a state statute can be violated in a violent way and a nonviolent way. And in those circumstances, and only those limited circumstances, the court permitted to look at the charging document, for example, the jury instruction, to determine whether this defendant was convicted of the statute in the violent way or the nonviolent way. I don't know that that's appropriate to this case, because if we look at the indictment and the charging indictment in the Mississippi case, which was tendered to the district court, it doesn't provide us much guidance. In addition, the Mississippi statute that this defendant was convicted under could be violated in a violent way and a nonviolent way, and it appears, although we don't know, that this defendant was convicted of it in a way that did not require proof of violence. But that doesn't end the inquiry. As this court pointed out, the question is not, did violence actually occur in this case? The question is not, does violence always occur in escape? The question is not, can we imagine a nonviolent escape? The question is, does an escape present the potential, the risk, that violence will occur? And all of the circuits that have looked at this question, the 4th, the 6th, the 8th, and the 10th, and the 5th, in the context of the career offender guideline, which is a little bit different than 924E, have all come to the same conclusion, which is this is a supercharged environment. This is someone who does not want to be in custody and is probably going to have to be recaptured by law enforcement officers with guns. This is a dangerous situation. It is a situation that creates this risk of violence, which can occur. It's also consistent with what this court has done in other 924E cases. In other 924E cases, this court has looked at the crimes of attempted burglary, unarmed robbery. In those contexts, what the court has looked at is not did this specific crime involve violence or does this specific crime always involve violence. It looks at has the defendant's conduct created a situation in which violence often occurs or is likely to occur. That's how this court has approached that question in other contexts, and it's completely consistent with what these other circuits have done in their analysis of escape. It is a supercharged, dangerous situation in which it is likely, or at least potentially possible, that serious injury will occur. And so I ask the court to follow its own approach to these cases and follow the decisions of the other circuits, and in reaching this approach, to follow the directives of Taylor, which is focus on the facts of conviction and the elements of that crime. And so I would ask the court to affirm the sentence of the lower court and its finding that the defendant was an armed career criminal within the meaning of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson?
Surprisingly, I think we agree with the basic framework that this court should follow Taylor and look at the statute, and only when it's ambiguous, as it is in this case, go beyond that to the charging document and other things, as this court set out in United States v. Shannon, the en banc decision, and its progeny. But, once again, that's not very helpful in this case because it doesn't say much. And to go as the other courts of appeal have done and say that pretty much any potential for injury is good enough reads the word serious out of the statute. If Congress hadn't meant that to have some meaning, it wouldn't have put that in there, and courts shouldn't be reading words out of statutes. It's not entirely binding, but there is no showing whether or not a substantial number of escapes are violent versus those where somebody just walks out of an unsecured facility or fails to return to custody. I'm not saying, obviously, that doesn't have to be any certain percentage. This court's rejected that in the past, but 0.01% probably wouldn't be good enough.
You're destroying an entire movie industry. I mean,
Well, I would certainly concede that some escapes do involve a potential for violence. I would not argue that categorically escape is non-violent either, just that it's not categorically violent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under